This is Turn It On. Everybody, and welcome to episode 43 of Turn It On. My name is Michael J, and this is my podcast. Thank you for joining me today, as always. I took a little break for the last week to recharge my batteries after the Billy Sheehan episode, but I'm back, and I just did a 10-day run of shows with Aaron Goodvin and the guys in the frozen tundra of Canada. It was minus 5 degrees Fahrenheit on the last day when we left Edmonton, Alberta, so I'm very happy to be back in the 30 to 40 range here in Nashville. My buddy and fellow Aaron Goodvin bandmate, bassist Matt Gandenberger, is here today, and I'll get to our chat in just a minute. But right now, it's time for everybody's favorite segment of the show. Yes, folks, this is
Stories from the Road!
Today's story comes to you from the very early days of my band Exploding Boy, when we were living and playing shows in our hometown of Rochester, New York. And this tale is from a night where I narrowly escaped death. The details are just a bit hazy for me because this took place in the late 80s, back when myself and the other band members were probably only 18 or 19 years old at the most. But when we would play gigs back then, we would usually drive one or two cars to sort of do a caravan type thing because our gear wouldn't fit into just one vehicle. And we used to rehearse in my parents' basement. So after the gigs, we would generally trek back to my house to unload gear and do the usual post-show, raid my parents' fridge, late-night hang. And on this particular night after our gig, I was driving my parents' white Ford Taurus, a vehicle which I drove for years, and I was followed by my two bandmates, Anthony and Jason, in their car behind me. And I was at a stoplight in the inner city in the turning lane waiting to go left when I noticed an oncoming car speeding toward me going probably way too fast. Knowing me, I probably had my music very loud in the car, so I turned left quickly in front of the speeding car and just kept going, not realizing what had then happened behind me at that moment at that intersection. I would not become privy to this information until about an hour or so later, maybe more. I got back to my parents' house and wondered why my bandmates were not right behind me, and I figured they must have stopped off for food or somewhere else, so I just did what I always do. I made myself a big bowl of Kraft mac and cheese, and I turned the television on, and I sat down and just started watching it and waited for what seemed like forever. Finally, my bandmates showed up half laughing and half shell-shocked, and when I asked them where they had been, they told me that the guys in that speeding car had apparently thought they were going to hit my car at that intersection, so they swerved. And because they were going so fast, they ended up jumping a curb and absolutely destroyed the tires and rims on their car and ended up on the sidewalk right in front of my bandmate's car and almost crashed into them as well. Now, these were two very large and now very angry men. And my friends got out of their car to make sure that the guys were all right. And at the time, I had shoulder length long hair, and so did the bassist in the band. And it was kind of a thing for us back then. And we might have looked like girls from certain angles. A lot of guys did back then. Anyway, these guys got out of their car and started swearing and carrying on and looking at their car. And they kept saying, quote, "Man, that bitch in the white Saab," and they clearly were referring to me. My friends thankfully just played along, and they told me that they were both thinking to themselves, "Please, Michael, don't come back here. Please don't come back here," because in their words, these guys would have beat the shit out of you until you were dead, the way they were talking. And apparently they blamed me for their accident, and I honestly don't remember whether I turned in front of them too quickly or not. My memory tells me that they were driving too fast on that city street, but then again, memories can be deceiving, so I don't want it to sound like I'm assigning blame here one way or another. But either way, they messed up their car really badly, and they were not happy about it at all. And Thankfully, no one was hurt, and there was only property damage at the time, and I was completely oblivious of it, as I still can be from time to time. So, that is the story of the night that I cheated death at the hands of a couple very angry guys who messed their car up. And this has been this week's installment of
Stories from the Road!
Okay, my friend Matt Gandenberger is here today. Matt plays bass for Aaron Goodvin, and he and I have been touring together and have also been occasional hotel roommates for the better part of the last year. Matt is an amazing bassist and a really cool and hilarious guy, and he keeps our whole crew laughing pretty much nonstop on the road. And it's been a pleasure and an honor to get to be on stage with him. And he's pushed me to become a much better player over the course of the last year, and we always have a great time. Matt and I sat down with a couple of handheld mics, so excuse the audio if it's a bit choppy here and there on this one. I work with what I've got sometimes, and when I travel, it's not always the optimal situation. But we sat down in a hotel room and had a great talk somewhere in Canada on one of our runs a little over a month ago. So sit back, relax, and listen to my talk with my buddy Matt Gandenberger. You know,
welcome just to it. Welcome to room 310.
Oh, well, thank you. It was a far walk from 308.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, real far walk.
So I just like to jump right into it. So that's kind of, okay. Yeah. We've been playing together for a little bit now.
Yeah.
But I don't know really too much about, you know, anything about how you got started or anything like that.
Yeah.
So from Cincinnati.
Correct.
How'd you get started with bass?
Well, my dad had built a bass. And it kind of sat around our house all the time.
Like built it from the ground up or put parts together?
Yeah, he bought, it was like, this was probably, I don't know, late 80s, maybe about 1990 or so.
Yeah.
Bought a Fender neck and had a body that, like a mahogany Telecaster guitar body that he never finished. Yeah. He was going to build a guitar back in high school.
Okay.
And found it at his dad's and was like, oh yeah, well, build a bass.
Yeah.
And he played like a little bit in high school, but decided he wanted to build a bass, so he did. And it just sat around, you know, would sit on a stand.
Always kind of there.
And, and around that time, I had started in band in school, so I was like kind of getting into music, you know, on a certain level. And I'd pick it up and make noise. And one day I decided, that'd be cool to know, like, what the hell I was doing.
Yeah.
So I was really into the Jim Blossoms at the time.
Okay.
And I just started learning Jim Blossom songs.
Really?
And learned their whole first record.
And went from there.
Yeah. Kind of. And that was my practice, as it were. I would just come home and I would play through that record.
Did you take to it right away?
Yeah. Like, and I don't really know why.
Yeah.
I do. My parents have told me that when I was real little, when Barney Miller would come on, like the theme song, which you know was very bass driven, like I was very intrigued by that. Which I don't know if that's, you know, I don't know how much I necessarily believe that.
Right.
I mean, I do. My mom wouldn't lie to me, but So I don't know. I guess maybe there was some sort of inherent affinity that I don't even know about, but
it's weird because usually, like in my experience growing up, the bass, like the person who played bass in the band, was always like, "Well, we've got
the worst guitar player.
Well, we've got we've got everybody else. We got you know, like everybody else has an instrument picked out. You can play the bass,
right?
Kind of thing."
I remember reading a story in Bass Player magazine one time, and the band Disturbed was real big at the time, and the story on how that guy came to play bass was, there were two kids, and they both play guitar.
Yep.
And they played a game of one-on-one basketball.
Oh, to see who would
to
get
determine
that.
Who had to play bass. And the loser of that one-on-one basketball game had to play bass.
Yeah.
And that pissed me off.
Yeah. So, well, was your dad musical apart from that, or just decided he was going to build a bass one day?
I don't know. It's kind of a weird thing. Overall, I wouldn't say he's musical.
Okay.
But he is at the same time.
Yeah. What does he do?
He does he does like IT stuff and like project management stuff for like businesses, you know, doing like office systems and that kind of stuff. Yeah. But he does woodwork. He's, I mean, he does all kinds of stuff. But he had a way of listening to music that, that really was beneficial and important to me in hindsight, where he would notice like little guitar parts or, you know, or this or that. And I remember as a kid, like it was annoying because he would be like, oh, listen to this. I'm like, I'm just trying to, you know,
right.
Like play with Legos or like, you know, or just listen to the damn song. But he'd like point out things. And I think that like, without me knowing it, it like trained my ear to listen more intently on, you know, for certain parts and, to certain things.
What kind of music was going on in the house? Like, what was he listening to? What was your mom listening to? Were they?
I don't know. It was kind of just whatever. I remember tended to have like the oldies station on, like in the car. But so that kind of stuff. Nothing specific. There, none of them were like real hardcore about any kind of artist or band or anything like that.
So it was just like the music of the day, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And what time frame would this be?
Like, what do you mean?
Like for me? Like, yeah, for you.
I mean, this is, you know, just as a kid throughout the 80s.
Okay.
You know, just listening to oldies. So, you know.
It was, so like 50s and 60s stuff.
Yeah. And so that kind of stuff. And I remember my dad totally disliked Led Zeppelin. You know, just hated Robert Plant's voice.
Yeah.
You know, which he's definitely come around on a lot, like, after me, like, you know, how deep I got into Led Zeppelin and stuff. But yeah, nothing very specific, but just, I don't know, kind of just a lot of little things that just kind of added up to, yeah, this is my shit.
Yeah.
I really like this.
All right.
You know?
Yeah. Do you have siblings?
I have one sister who's 10 and a half years younger than me.
Okay. Wow. That's a big difference.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is she musical at all? She play anything or? Or are you kind of the odd man out?
Well, she's not really. She does theater production.
Oh, okay.
So,
all right.
So she's
very, in the arts.
Yeah. Very into the arts, very into music, but, you know, she played, I think, flute or something like in school.
Yeah.
You know, grade school or whatever, but, you know, didn't really pique her interest.
So. Yeah. So after the Gin Blossoms, like, who were the bass players that really got you kind of like, that sort of really inspired you to kind of go deeper into
Well, around that time, so I would listen to, I was very into Pearl Jam, and so Jeff Ament was like, oh man, this dude rules. He plays a three over all these chords, you know, and like, holy shit, he plays an eighth string. Oh man, that's fretless, you know. And I listen to some of that stuff now. I'm like, whatever.
Yeah.
But it's still, you know, Pearl Jam still kicks ass, you know. And so that kind of Robert DeLeo, and I always had Bass Player magazine. So
Robert DeLeo is one of the most like underrated.
Absolutely.
Such a brilliant bassist.
But I was always reading guys talking about James Jamerson. Mm-hmm. James Jamerson. Yep. James Jamerson. Okay, well, I need to Well, if this guy who I think rules likes James Jamerson, then I need to like James Jamerson.
Sure.
So then I go and I start digging in there, and like my entire world blossomed.
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit, I know all this stuff. I mean, not know it like, oh, I can play that.
Right.
But like, I know all this. And that's that one guy.
Yeah.
Fuck me.
Yeah.
This rules. And so I went, like, I'm still at the bottom of the James Jamerson rabbit hole.
Sure. How old of a kid were you when you got into that? Because that's kind of an odd, like, I mean, it's weird. With you and Casey both, like, you guys have this sort of sphere of influence that is completely foreign to me. I was telling Casey on the podcast I did with him that the oldies were around, but my dad was real jazz stuff.
Right.
So I had, like, lots of jazz and classical, and then my uncles were Stones, Beatles,
yeah,
the Zeppelin, the Who, and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So the oldies were sort of like peripherally there. So it's odd for me,
right?
But not
right.
Odd, not odd, I shouldn't say odd, but it's just like it's just something. It's a world I don't I don't yet completely understand. Kind of.
Well, like I was probably, I don't know. I think I was maybe like 14, maybe 15 when like I asked for the Standing in the Shadows of Motown book,
yeah,
for Christmas.
Okay,
and I got it, and like. That thing, like I still have that copy of that, and right. It's, I mean, pages are falling out of it.
Sure.
Because I just went through that thing yeah. so much.
Yeah.
And it just, I don't know. I also have a very OCD mindset. So as I started to really get into stuff, you know, I would hear something and be like, that's really fucking cool.
Yeah.
Who are those guys?
Right.
You know, and this is a lot of music that's not necessarily bands.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're talking a lot of studio cats. And then, so then I'd be like, oh, well, that's, you know, that's Mike Leach on bass.
Uh-huh.
Well, what other stuff did Mike Leach play?
Yep.
So then, like, I find out, like, oh, he was at this studio, and, like, he played with all these. And so getting in, and I'm like that with drummers, too. Very obsessed about drummers.
You were saying that last night as we were chatting in the room, like, after the gigs, just about...
I mean, I think... I feel like I think more like a drummer than I do a bass player. Playing and just in general. But... So I developed this way of, like, I just got super obsessed with finding out all these guys and then their, like, stylistic tendencies to where I could listen to this Aretha Franklin record and be like, okay, that sounds like it was recorded in New York, because I'm pretty sure that's Chuck Rainey and not Tommy Cogbill or Jerry Jamont on bass.
Yeah.
You know, or like, oh, you know, like, just figuring out, like, little things in And to me, that was a way of, even without like learning all the songs, you know, that was a way of learning.
Yeah.
You know, these guys and how they played and kind of their influences, you know.
Right.
And all those guys, even contemporaries of them, all talked about Jamerson.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like.
He's name checked a lot by a lot of people. Yeah.
And like, he is the man as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
It. Yeah. You know, which I never really played upright, so like. You know, Jamerson would have named all these, you know, Mingus and, you know, Trey Brown and Ron Carter.
Sure.
Would have named all those guys, which I love those guys and I respect them. And, but I never really played upright, so I never really got into that stuff.
Okay.
You know, and so like the advent of the electric bass was Jamerson, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, okay.
You know.
Were you pretty much self-taught, or did you take classes, or did you lessons or anything?
Like, pretty much the only stuff that I was like taught was, you know, like music theory in high school, and then just being in band.
Yeah.
You know, so like, and that was like when I first started, you know, like I was in band, and so we always played a B flat scale. You know?
Yeah.
And so I asked my dad how to play a B flat scale on the bass.
Uh-huh.
And he showed me. And so then I'm also very visual, so like I could see, like, okay, well that's what that looks like.
Right.
And so, I don't know, just it all kind of made sense. Like, okay, well, that's what a scale looks like. And then, oh, well, look, I get those notes over here, too.
Right.
You know, and then like, oh, cool. And I used to play, and when I first started, you know, I was into the Jim Blossoms.
Sure.
And I would record their music videos, like when they were on, like on VHS.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then play along with them, and... Like, oh, Bill Lean's playing, like, wait, he's playing
trying to see what they were doing.
This is way up here, so that's how I need to play.
Right.
And then I did the same thing with the Blues Brothers movie. And I recorded it, and I would fast forward to, like, the musical parts.
Yep.
And I'd, like, oh, well, Duck Dunn plays a C way down here on the third fret of the A string. What? Bill Lean plays it on the eighth fret of the... Well, that's weird.
I learned...
You know, just like, okay, well, I'm going to do what Duck Dunn does, because... Right. That's fucking Duck Dunn.
Dude, that's how that's how I learned how to play Stairway to Heaven was the was Zeppelin on Live Aid. Was watching Jimmy Page play that and going, "Oh, that's how he does it." It's crazy when you can, cuz I'm a pretty visual person too, when you can see it. You go, "Oh, that's how they're doing it."
Right.
You
know, cuz
sometimes things sound like, how the fuck is that possible? Especially with stringed instruments, you're just going, how they do
that? Well, and especially, you know, Led Zeppelin, for instance, when you listen to the record and you're like, wow, that's... It's like, well, yeah, Jimmy Page put all these guitar parts, you know, he's doing so many textures and, you know, filling spaces without filling all of them.
Right.
So how the hell do they do that live? Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
What other kinds of stuff were you into in school, kind of like, as you were growing up?
Really into math.
Really?
Yeah. Math is one of those things that just fucking makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Just, oh, yeah, that's the way it is.
Right.
Cool. And I think that helps with music, too, because...
Sure. Well, it's all mathematical.
The two are just, you know, so aligned that it's insane. Yeah. But, and I played baseball. I was pretty good at baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Played basketball. Found out I was way too short for that. Way too white for that, you know. But that's still my biggest dream in life, is to dunk a fucking basketball on a 10-foot rim. That is, like, for real. Ask my wife.
Really?
Almost daily, I bring that up somehow, some way.
Yeah.
And I'm going to train for it. I'm going to fucking do it before I die.
I can't wait.
I've watched YouTube videos on these motherfuckers that are like 5'6", and they train for like a year just to dunk a basketball, and they do.
That's,
and
what? Okay, now you pique my interest. What, like, what? How do you train for that?
I don't know.
Work on, like, your legs?
Yeah. Yeah, and just get like, whatever, you know, whatever kind of muscle groups to get that spring.
I didn't realize that was a, like, that was
and
a...
And the coordination of getting the momentum in your whole body, you know, to get the most out of a jump, you know? I'm serious, man. I want to fucking dunk.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't realize that was a trainable skill. I just thought you either had that or you didn't.
Yeah. I mean, Spud Webb, oh, man. That dude... What an amazing little bastard. Just insane.
It's amazing. So, did you go to college?
I did. A couple times.
What'd you study in college?
Well, the first time I went was right out of high school, and that was begrudgingly.
Mm-hmm. Your parents kind of made you do it?
Not as much as my band director in high school.
Okay.
Like, pretty much, like, no, you need to do this. Like,
okay.
And so I did, and I just, you know, I was 18. I knew everything, and...
Right.
And, you know, I wanted to do this and not this, and...
Yeah.
It was a... Pretty much a waste of quite a bit of money in a year of time.
Okay.
But, and then... I don't even remember when I went back.
Were you playing in bands all through this time at all?
Yeah, and that was the thing. Like, I started playing with a band when I was probably about... Well, I played with a band in high school, and we were like, you know... Oh, man, Guido's Basement!
Yeah.
Whoa.
Was that, the band was called Guido's Basement?
Yep.
Okay.
And that's where we rehearsed.
I'll go. I was going to ask my next question.
Yep. It's not just a clever name.
Okay. Was it original stuff, or was it like cover
things? Yeah, I mean, you know, we played a bunch of covers, but we had originals that at the time were like, oh, man, that's so awesome.
90s flavored stuff, kind of?
Yeah. We played like Chili Peppers, we did... we did Pearl Jam stuff. We had this Led Zeppelin medley that we did that, like, it was hilarious. And a lot of it was kind of my brainchild, but, like, we would, like, learn, we would start learning, like, a Zeppelin tune, and we'd get to a point in a song where, like, somebody couldn't do something, you know, like, oh, yeah, I can't do it. So, like, we would play, like, this portion of... this Zeppelin song until we got to this guitar solo that
nobody could do.
Yeah. And then so then we go into like this, and then we get to like the trippy part of Whole Lot of Love, and like, oh, let's do a drum solo there instead of that whole thing.
Right.
And then, so a lot of 90s stuff and that, but so I was in that band, and then, like everybody else in the band was like a few years older than me.
Okay.
So those guys graduated and, you know, got onto other things and, and then I started playing with these guys from Cincy that, crazy how I ended up meeting them, but they were my age and from different parts of the town. And we played like original rock, like instrumental stuff.
Okay.
Three-piece guitar, bass, drums. And I played with those guys up until about 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
But... in many manifestations.
Uh-huh.
So we did that for a while, and then we got a singer when I was about 18, and we did, it was kind of like a Pearl Jammy type, you know,
sure.
thing. And yep. did that for a little while, and then did the instrumental thing again because the singer was kind of on a different page.
Right.
Like, he was real into Widespread Panic and, like...
Jam bands.
Yeah. And well, specifically them, like, took, like, a 2 or 3 month hiatus and...
Followed the band.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, he and his girlfriend made jewelry, like, on the road to, like,
of course.
You know, sell. And, yeah. and
were you guys just playing around Cincy, or were you touring, or what were you doing?
Yeah, pretty much just Cincy.
Yeah. Was there, how serious a thing was it? Were you kind of like, did you have it in your head that you were going to, that this is what you were going to do, and it was going to
be? Yeah, yeah, and we all did, and it was, you know, very naive, but... Like, yeah, we're just going to fucking make it, you know? Like,
yeah.
we kick ass, and, like, we're just... This is going to be our fucking life. You know, we're going to tour. We're going to play stadiums. We're going to
sure.
have fucking music videos with Lamborghini Countach limos with hot tubs in the back like fucking Motley Crue. It's going to be kick ass, you know? But, like...
Yeah.
And so we did that for a while, and like... and then we had played some shows... With this, like, band, the only thing I can say is that, legitimately, if Bone Thugs and Harmony did a collaboration with Phish...
Really?
This was this band.
Wow, okay.
And it was fucking awesome.
Did you... Like, anything recorded at all, or any kind of...
Yeah, well, like... Well, so this is this other band, like, that we ended up playing some shows with.
Mm-hmm.
And... They kind of didn't get along, and they were going to break up. And so the MC from that band ended up joining our band. So now it's still the three of us that have done this, like, rock thing and this Pearl Jammy thing and this rock thing again. Well, now we're doing a hip-hop band.
Okay.
But it's still kind of more of, like blues rock with rap vocals.
Okay.
We did that for years. And then it got even more, like, we ended up with, like... Like a dude running tracks.
Mm-hmm. Did you do well with that?
Yes and no. Monetarily,
uh-huh.
Not in the slightest.
Well, most bands don't.
But
make
we
money.
we were playing like every single Saturday and Sunday in Cincy.
Really?
For a few years.
Okay.
And it was fucking awesome.
Good following?
Yeah, really good following.
Okay.
And but it just, you know, at that time, I mean, we were all just way into partying, so we would do a 7 or 8 song set.
Yeah.
And after every single song, we would all do a Jaeger bomb.
So by the end of the show,
so
yeah.
you can imagine what
I
kind of
yeah, I was in a band like that for a while too.
That ends
yep.
up being.
Yep, yeah.
But it was awesome. You know, we had some really, really good tunes, and it was very original. And that just kind of, you know,
kind of fizzled out.
Yeah. And then the three of us ended up doing, then the guitar player started singing.
Okay.
And so we did like a 3-piece thing there again. Yeah. And then we ended up finding this guy named Brent James. Well, he kind of more or less found us. And so I was with a band called Brent James and the Vintage Youth for probably 5-6 years.
Okay.
Up until a couple years ago. And we had a lot of really, really good stuff going. Uh-huh. I mean, we had tune on Sirius XM. We had music videos on GAC.
Oh, really? Okay.
Like, a lot of good things, but I don't know. The dynamic was more like, you know, ride or die band.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, I'm trying to pay some fucking bills.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, yeah... Like, it's really cool to do, like, this, you know, open for Cadillac 3, but if we're getting paid, like, $200 to do it, and we got to go to fucking Springfield, Illinois.
Yeah.
You know.
It's tough to make. It's tough to sustain it. Yeah.
So, you know, I just, you know, politely stepped away from that a couple years ago, you know. And
okay.
No hard feelings with any of these guys. You know, still some of my best friends, but, you know, just started... trying to be more of the side man, you
right,
know?
Right. Like, did you, so you and Casey, you've known each other since high school?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he was in like the 7th or 8th grade, and I was probably like a sophomore or junior or something.
Okay. How did you both meet?
Just playing in the marching band.
Okay, so you were playing? Were you playing drums in the marching band?
No, I was playing tuba.
Oh, that's right.
I used to fucking rip a tuba. I did. Like I could play. Like I miss having one. Like I want to get a sousaphone.
Yeah,
big time.
But yeah, could you still do it? You think?
The last time I sold my horn. I had this really nice Cervini concert horn, and I sold it maybe 8 years ago, and probably like the 3 or 4 years prior, maybe once a year I would get it out and like play, and it was really frustrating. So I'm like, oh man, I can't do shit on this thing anymore. You know, I mean, I could still play, and but like, couldn't play the way I used to be able to play.
Was that something you took lessons for? Because obviously, you took to that too?
Yeah, I mean, that was just band, you know, like,
yeah.
I had started playing that, I think, in like the sixth grade.
Okay.
Which I don't even remember. The first thing I played in band was an alto saxophone.
So there was some kind of instruction. There was some kind of structured instruction for you for that, sort of?
I don't know. Like, I played saxophone for a year.
Okay.
And then I played euphonium for a year.
Really?
And then I decided I wanted to play tuba. I really don't know why.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's nothing fucking appealing about tuba. Yeah. You know? It's fucking...
You're not picking up any girls playing the tuba.
Yeah, it's heavy. It's fucking somewhat obnoxious, you know? It's definitely not cool. Like, I don't have any idea. I don't remember why.
It's the fartiest of all the...
Yeah. But, I mean, it can be totally cool, but at the same time, it's never actually cool, you know? But I have no idea. Like, I just remember that's how that happened. So I had been playing that since I was like in the sixth grade or something.
Right.
And so by the time I got to high school, like I played in the All Ohio concert band and shit.
Oh, shit, really?
Okay. Yeah. And I don't know. I just,
yeah.
And I think, you know, as trite as it is, I think there's just, you know, I just have, you know, I'm one of those people that like is supposed to play music.
I get it, yeah.
You know, and I'm definitely not the greatest, you know, but I'm supposed to play music, and
yeah.
So I do.
Yeah, similar thing.
It's fucking fun.
Similar thing with me, man. I started piano lessons when I was super young, and just it's always something that I just did.
Yeah,
you know, like I was telling you last night, you were asking because you're a brand new dad. Congrats on that.
Thank you.
But you were asking about kids and how, you know, like not knowing sort of like, how, you know, how do you
direct them or, you know, like know what kind of nudging is too much or not enough.
Yeah, you know, you don't want to be, what do they call them? Helicopter parents where you're like,
I don't want to be Joe Jackson out here, you know?
Nobody, well,
practice.
Yeah, right.
Fucking Randy, practice.
Yeah. Randy, get on it, Randy. Well, yeah, I told you, my dad always kind of looked at it like you expose the kids to as much stuff as you can, and they'll sort of tell you what they're interested in. And that was the case with my sister and I, my brother. We kind of all do sort of different things, but we're all, you know, the music was always in the house kind of thing.
Yeah.
So,
And that's, you know, and I guess, you know, just that whole specter, you know, or sector of life, you know, like, you know,
Phil Spector.
Yeah. Oh man, that guy rules. But what a creep!
He killed a guy.
Yeah. No, it was a chick.
A girl.
Yep. It's right there in the front door.
Yeah.
But that sector of life, you know, like I just kind of navigate, I guess, as I go. But
yeah.
Yeah. You know, like I've got two young nephews. One's 5 and one's 2. And when they were very little, like before they could talk, like my sister-in-law, like taught them like some simple sign language, you know, like sitting, you know, in their high chair, like how to say I'm finished, you know, or
wow,
or please, you know, and they would do that. Like, and I learned some simple sign language, and I think that's brilliant, you know, like, and my wife and I have talked, like certainly have our son learning other languages, at least one other language.
They're sponges when they're little, man.
From an early age, just to be, you know,
right,
not to try to be like the super smartest, baddest ass,
sure, yeah,
you know, kid around, but like,
yeah,
just the exposure. And I think that helps, you know, be more absorbent of other cultures,
yeah,
and different people,
sure,
which is hugely important,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And I think that's a big problem with a lot of people, is that like, oh well, I grew up in this fucking small town, and like anything other than this,
right,
well, fuck that,
yeah,
no, fuck you. Just my opinion. Just my opinion.
That's great. Was there a shift in your thinking when your son was born, or that you noticed, or
I definitely had, like, I wouldn't say that,
or leading up to it, maybe kind of.
Yeah, like since he's been born, definitely noticed. Like, I wouldn't say like, oh, I'm a totally different person.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
But like, I look at a lot of things through a different lens.
Uh-huh. How so?
I don't know, just the idea of just, I mean, even when my wife was pregnant, like oh man, there's like so much more at stake in general.
Right.
But like since he's around, like, man, like this is my little dude.
Yeah.
You know, and so like, I don't know, just things are, I just think of things in a different, from a different perspective, mm-hmm. I think, you know, that,
sure.
Yeah, like, I shouldn't go 95 miles an hour. I don't really need to get there. Let's just go like 80. It'll be cool.
Stick around for the kid. Yeah.
Yeah. I really don't need to go that fast.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But you know, I'll still do donuts, yeah.
Well,
you know, or like,
you were doing them yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'll still have fun. I still like cars and horsepower.
I like when you drive.
Yeah,
it's fun.
I love driving.
It's fun.
Yeah. But you know, so just, I don't know. That's just like a example at the top of my head, but
yeah,
I just, you know, it's, life is grander,
uh-huh.
You know, like it, like,
sure,
my perspective, like what I can see of life is, has broadened,
right?
You know, like, wow, there's a lot more here.
Yeah.
Than
has it made it harder for you to be on the road?
In ways, like, it's tough. Like,
yeah,
my wife just posted this video the other night of him just giggling. You know, like,
yeah,
her sister like clapping his hands together, and he just giggled like crazy. And then he stopped, and then she clapped his hands together again, and he just giggled like crazy. And like, I'm like, oh man,
I missed it.
Yeah, like, yeah. I want to see that,
yeah,
shit.
Yeah.
You know, like. But, you know, at the same time, this is what I do.
Sure.
And my wife is understanding of that and supportive of that. And
she knew what she signed up for, basically.
Yeah. You know, and so this is, you know, I don't think there's really a typical life
to live. Nothing's normal with this, yeah.
Well, I mean, just for anybody.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, Aaron and I were talking yesterday morning briefly before you came down. Mm-hmm. We had a lobby call yesterday, and he was kind of, we both were sort of talking about how, like, we've had a little break with the holidays and, it, you know, being home and stuff like that. It's been great to be with the family.
Yeah.
But for me personally, I'm kind of like, oh, all right.
Feels like stale water
a little
bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like, you kind of got to keep moving, you know.
Yeah, definitely, because it's, you know, it was great to get back on stage last night, but it was like, ooh, there's some cobwebs there. You know, like, even though I've been playing every day, it's still like, you're shaking off the dust a little bit, going, oh, probably shouldn't have hit that note.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, it's great to be home and feel that quote unquote normalcy.
Sure.
But like, normal is abnormal. The normal is actually abnormal.
Right.
You know, or there, I guess that should be vice versa. Abnormal is normal.
Yeah.
But.
Well, we do so many, and I mentioned this on the podcast I did with Casey, where it's, most people don't do this, don't realize, like, I get funny questions from people like, oh, you have a day off in Canada? Are you going to get to see anything? Like, no.
Yeah, I'm going to see four walls in a hotel room.
That's exactly it. Because we shuffle between some of the most mundane, strange, like, doing nothing, boring moments that you ever have. And then you go on stage for that 90 minutes, or if we're lucky, 90 minutes, but normally like an hour, 45 minutes, an hour.
Yeah.
And that's the whole reason you exist. And that's like 1% of our day is spent doing what we're here to do in the first place.
Right, exactly.
So it's like, yeah, it's a strange, it's a really strange existence. I love it, personally. I love, you know, like, I think I relax more when I'm on the road, which is weird.
Well, and I've never been diagnosed, but...
I know what you're going to say.
Myself, yeah. My wife, my mom, my dad, anyone around me would certainly say that I have ADHD.
Yeah.
You know, and this kind of works for that, you know?
Sure.
Because I don't want to just, like, when I am just home, uh-huh. as much as I love being there with my wife and now with my son, too,
right?
I've got it, like, even when I am home,
yeah,
like, I'm doing some sort of fucking project. I'm out in the garage, I'm rearranging my, you know, my spray paints on this shelf, you know?
Yeah.
I'm moving these car parts to this cabinet because I think I can get more stuff there, you know?
Right.
Like, I'm doing something.
Yeah. I want to talk about the cars. How did you get so into cars?
I don't really know that either. I just always did.
Everything appeared.
But something about cars was cool to me, and and it's never turned back since.
Because you'll be rattling stuff off sometimes, and I'm like, yep, that looks like what that is. I could, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love me some cars.
Yeah.
Love me some cars.
Yeah. That's great.
Horsepower. Horsepower rolls.
I think you found a second career.
Yeah.
As a race car driver.
Oh, man. Would love it. I would love it.
I could see you doing that. Actually.
I could see me doing that too. Let's convince my wife.
Yeah. That's, you want to stay around longer? Probably not the, the profession to go into.
Right, right.
So when did you start playing with the Vandals? I know you've been doing a little bit of that. Through meeting Casey, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. I think I started with them maybe about, I don't know, as I'm getting upwards in age these days.
It all runs together. Timelines,
yeah. It seems like that was like a couple years ago, but I think it was maybe like six or seven years ago.
Get ready, buddy. It gets worse.
Yeah. It's like everything's just like, oh, I think that was last week, right?
Yeah, right, right, yeah.
But yeah, maybe 6, 7 years ago, okay, something like that. Okay.
How did that work out? They were looking for somebody to sub in or something?
Yeah, they needed somebody to sub, and then ended up that guy took another gig and was needing to sub like...
Okay.
Pretty much everything.
Yeah.
And
is that how you and Casey started playing together, or?
Yeah, other than just like the marching band in high school, because he was, you know, he's a few years younger than me, so I graduated, you know, and I was playing in my bands or whatever, and so he was still there in high school, and then he went to college in Columbus, so I mean, we really didn't like hang out really at all after that. And there were a couple times throughout the years, like he would hit me up for like a one-off with the Vandals, and either I couldn't do it or they managed to figure something else out.
Yeah.
But yeah, and he hit me up, you know, 6, 7 years ago about doing a couple things, and I did, and then they needed somebody full-time.
Yeah.
And
I could see that you'd like be the perfect fit for that situation.
Oh yeah,
it's
fun. It's fun. And you know, I'll be the first to admit that I don't stick to those little 50s walking bass lines.
Right. Yeah.
But you know,
yeah, that's
all right. I also don't try to be Stanley Clark. You know.
Yeah.
Because I'm not Stanley Clark.
Right.
You know. Which he's one of those guys that like.
Yeah.
It's just a mind fuck.
My dad had a lot of the Stanley Clark stuff,
man.
Growing
school
up.
School days,
so,
rips.
Yeah.
Lopsy Lou. Like that dude, like he's one of those guys that I've never, like, I guess I've been inspired by.
Mm-hmm.
But like I'd listen to it, I'm just like, that's amazing. But there's never been anything that like makes me say, I need to do that.
Right.
But Jamerson, I listen to him, I'm like, I need to do that. That's perfect.
Right.
You know, and if I can do that, I can survive in whatever. Which, of course, you know, I wouldn't be able to play, you know, Stanley Clark or Vic Wooten or whatever, you know. But,
right, right.
But, yeah, like, there are a lot of guys like that that I'm like, this is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
But that's just it, you know. Like, it's awesome, and I put it on the awesome shelf, and then,
sure,
you know, it's not like,
yeah,
just... like absorbed in my brain and my body
right.
forever is like, the thing.
Yeah.
You know,
what's it been like for you? Kind of sort of making the transition into country, because that's, if you know, I know for me, it was a little bit of a challenge.
Well, I tell you, like, I feel like personally, like this gig with mm-hmm, Aaron mm-hmm. is a great opportunity to not have to like narrow myself down too right. far into this country.
Yeah, it's really great, isn't it? And I guess it's hard to explain that, but his music is not, it's not the typical.
No,
it's and not I feel, the typical thing.
Like, I feel like every night when we play, like, I feel like I'm playing exactly what the hell I want to play.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I think it works.
Yeah.
But being more into country music has definitely developed, I've grown just my, I don't know, acknowledgement of, like, the importance of lyrics and a story and uh-huh. and just how good, like, some of these country songs, like, and really going back and getting more into, you know, the Waylon and the Merle and the,
right.
you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
Kris Kristofferson sure. and, you know, Conway Twitty. Fucking love Conway Twitty,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
But, and just listen to these songs that, like, man, how wasn't I into this all my life?
Right.
This is amazing. Because yeah. this is like such a cool story. And it's so listenable.
Right.
And
did you go back and like do some studying kind of with that? Or like, because
I wouldn't say like studying, but just constantly like expanding uh-huh. and, you know, like, okay, when I go to a record store, I'm not only looking for this and this and this, but now I'm looking for this and this and this and this and this
right.
too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and just constantly, and that's one thing, like, when I'm home,
are you big into vinyl like Casey is?
Yes.
Yeah.
And when I'm not on the road, I'm at home, and that's the first thing I do in the morning is grab a record and put it on. And it could be a Donny Hathaway record.
Yeah.
It could be Fleetwood Mac. Yep. It could be what, you know,
right,
Loretta Lynn, and just listening to music. Yeah. And my OCD keeps me from like getting too much accomplished while I have that, because I don't want to like miss out on part of a song, because that's important to me. That's a part of the song.
Right. Yeah,
so
yeah.
I kind of hover, make sure I'm like, or I turn it up very loud
yeah.
and make sure I don't miss, like, oh man, there's a 4 minor right there. I don't want to miss that fucking 4 minor, you know, like that's
yeah.
integral.
Yeah.
You know,
it's weird. I think you guys are going to end up costing me a lot of money. Cause it's like, I vinyl's something that I had vinyl. Yeah. That was all I had when I was growing up. It was vinyl. It was like 45s. And my parents used to reward me for doing my chores with, like, we can go to the record store and you mm-hmm. can pick out 2 45s. Okay, cool. But, it's something, was that something you like went back to? And or is that like, or is that something you always kind of, have you always had vinyl records around? Did your parents have like vinyl and stuff growing up?
I remember there being like a few records around, and I had, when I was a little kid, like I'm talking preschool,
mm-hmm.
I had this little Sesame Street record player, and it like the lid open, you know, yep. like you just yep. had like a carry handle and the lid opened.
Yeah.
And I think you could play, I don't think you could play a full size record on it. And there were, I don't know, maybe a handful of Beach Boys 45s.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they were my mom's, my dad's. I have no idea where they came from.
Yeah.
But I burnt those things
up. Sure.
And yeah. I remember taking, like, show and tell. Kids are bringing in, like, Cabbage Patch dolls and, like, radio control monster trucks. I took my Sesame Street record player in with a Beach Boys 45. Like, that's the shit I did.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, again, like, I feel like there's some sort of, like, force before
sure.
I was yeah. even yeah. around that, like, yeah, this motherfucker's gonna play some
yeah.
music.
My favorite, again, I'll reference my dad, because he's mm-hmm. kind of the guy that for me gave me so many of the building blocks that I kind of have built on to,
yeah,
to
yeah.
do what I do. And he always said, as a kid, even he, a couple things, two things. What was number one was, I don't believe that you choose music. I think it chooses you.
Right.
And
right.
And that's tippy, as hippy dippy as I get on about anything.
Yeah.
But I really believe that. I don't think, because yeah. I don't think any of us have a choice, you know?
Right.
I think we were saying the other day too, Because some of these days, traveling get pretty long. We had to wait. We were waiting for Casey to get through customs the other day.
Right, right.
And for like 3 hours.
Oh,
just
yeah.
You and I just sitting in a car. Yeah. And I always say, I'm like, we must really love to play. Like, because right. it is a driving force that none of us right, have a right. choice to do it. And the other thing my dad always said too, which struck me, was it's not what you play, it's what you choose not to play that matters.
Yeah.
It's those moments that you let breathe.
Yeah.
And you know, and I don't know, it's yeah. It's,
yeah. It's, you know, like I think, you know, we always hear the less is more thing. Mm-hmm. And I certainly believe that.
To a point, yeah.
But you know, Jamerson, super busy bass
yeah,
player.
Yeah, yeah.
But you look at the context.
Right.
And you got this big band, lots of times two drummers mm-hmm. just doing
yep.
You know, just like drummers aren't doing a whole lot of stuff.
Right.
So, and you know, you got guitars, tap tap
yep.
tap,
yeah.
tap, you know, two and four snaps.
Right.
And so there's a lot of yeah. just solid, like
sure.
sonic rhythm. Yep. So like, well, there's room for
right.
for busy bass. You know, it works.
Yeah.
And something that I always thought was cool was listening to, you know, guys that like Robert DeLeo,
uh-huh.
who
he's busy as hell, but it never bothers me.
Well, and I remember yeah. reading a thing and he said, I feel like everything I do is just a Jamerson rehash. You know?
Yeah.
And John Paul Jones.
Very, same thing, you know, yeah.
And listening to guys in a different context play in that way always made me think, yeah, I can play. And I've thought that's why bands like that are so good.
Right.
They're not listening to this band and this band and this band that are in the genre
right. They're listening
of
to other
music
things, yep.
that they are making.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because that kind of ends up just, it all boxes itself in.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like Zeppelin's listening to Delta Blues and
right.
listening to, you know, all this other stuff, you know, like John Paul Jones was way into classical music and
sure.
and it all came together in this way that created something new.
Yeah.
Without them deciding, hey, let's right. make something new.
Right.
It's like, well, this is what we make.
Right.
Well, that's inspiring because you took all your little influences and they're all added up together yeah. to make something else. And so, and I've never played in a like R&B band, mm-hmm. you know, or a like an old school soul band.
Sure.
So every single time I play, like to a certain extent, I'm like, I wonder what Jamerson would do, you right. know, or like, right. like how can I be Jamerson right now?
Yeah.
And it's always in, you know, it's in fucking country or it's in rock
yeah.
and roll.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and so it ends up being different.
Yeah.
And it's interesting.
I think the way you play in this band is perfect. It's kind of it's kind of an interesting group of guys we have assembled.
Yeah.
And I'm actually thankful that you're a busier player for the sake of the band, because for me, I'm much more of a rhythm guy than I am anything mm-hmm. else. And if I'm doing a solo, I'm not a million notes an hour guy. I've never
right,
been that.
Right.
I don't have any desire to be that kind of person. But what you do lays a really nice foundation for me to be me,
yeah.
and for Rob to do what he does, and for Aaron to do what he does too. It's
right,
kind of
right.
it's just an interesting thing because it's we're playing country music, but there's these other influences in there that you wouldn't typically
right,
think
right.
would be in that. That kind yeah. of, I mean, it's a really interesting eclectic group of guys that,
yeah.
that are
yeah,
in this
it
situation.
Is. It really
so
is.
Yeah, so yeah. I think it works really well.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. So, have you done other things in Nashville as a result of this kind of thing? Like, have you played with other people? Or?
Yeah, I played some shows with a guy named Adam Doliak.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Really, really great dude. Really great group of guys. And really cool tunes.
Yeah.
You know, like more of a modern country type thing.
Sure.
Played with a guy named Jackie Lee, kind of similar thing.
Okay.
You know, like
yeah.
modern country
yeah.
kind of thing. But other than that, mostly just the Aaron gig
yeah.
and
yeah,
the
yeah.
Vandells, and then now having a kid. So,
yeah.
you know.
You're staying pretty busy.
Yeah, plate's full.
Yeah, yeah.
You
yeah.
know, but
yeah.
let's fill it up even more. I'm going to be doing a show with Casey
Oh, you told me about this.
With Jace
yep.
Everett.
Yep.
Yeah, that's here cool. In February 8th, I believe.
I will be there. Spot. I will be there making faces at you.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. But like, I'm looking forward to playing that show. Jace is super cool.
Yep.
And
that's great.
Super great at what he does.
That's going to be really cool, man.
And yeah, Dan Cohen.
Yeah.
Phenomenal guitar player.
Yeah.
That'll be fun. And hopefully that'll, lead to some more stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. As we're kind of wrapping things up here, we're coming up on an hour close.
Well, fuck me.
I know, it's kind of, I have a segment that I do at the beginning of every podcast called Stories from the Road, where I give my fucking crazy shit that's happened to me through the years.
Uh-huh.
Do you have, and you can feel free, throw somebody under the bus, or you can change the names to protect the innocent. What's the craziest thing that's ever happened to you in any situation you've been in? Do you have one?
Oh, man, I probably do.
Is there something that just struck you, even with this, is there something that struck you as just so funny or so crazy? It doesn't have to be musical either. It can be like...
See, my problem right now is I'm trying to think of like the craziest thing. I don't know. I heard about this band that they were on tour with this guy. And
is this you changing the names to protect people?
I don't know what I'm doing,
okay.
Michael.
Okay,
I don't
great.
Know what
That's
I'm
fantastic.
Doing. But I heard about this story.
All right.
And there was a guitar player in one of these bands that invited these two girls to get on the bus. And they were hanging out. It was for a while. And one of them went to the bathroom, instructed the other one to come with her. So we're on a Prevost here. And bathroom
okay.
is...
Okay.
This is not large.
It's not a huge bathroom on those buses. No.
So, and then somebody just ended up leaning up against the bathroom door while both of them were in there. And they freaked out.
Oh, like leaning against it so they could, because it opens out, so they couldn't get out.
Right. And they freaked out. And then once that person quit leaning on the door, they ran out of the bus. And it was like another 45-minute ordeal. Cops were called.
Oh, no.
Never came up to the buses that I heard of.
Okay.
From these people that were in these bands on this tour with these people.
Right, with these people.
But they freak out, and they're outside, and they're screaming. Then they end up getting in a fight with each other. And there's one of them walks like a block up the road, and they're screaming at each other and crying. It was a shit show. That's what I heard.
I heard it was
a shit
See,
show.
See, I like that. That's good. That's good.
So I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good.
I'm sure in like 15 minutes I'll think of something either way funnier or way
I'm
crazier.
Right across the hall. You can always, but hey, I'm going to pop back over there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, dude, thanks for sitting down and chatting with me. Thanks for coming across the hall to my hotel room from your hotel room.
Yeah. I mean, it was a haul. I had to put my boots on.
I know. And I mean, I appreciate you being here.
Yeah, man.
And we'll do some more playing this year. It's going to be a fun year, hopefully.
Hell yeah.
We're playing.
We'll have some good times.
Yeah, yeah. Going to France in July.
Yes, we are.
So I'm going to brush up on my French.
Parlez-vous français or some shit.
I'm going to get an omelette
See,
du
that's
fromage.
What I'm talking about. My son needs to learn another
that's
language because I sound like a dumbass.
I'm going to get a Royale with cheese.
Yeah. There you go. Oh, man. Yeah, I should learn another language before we go.
We probably should brush up on some French phrases.
Yeah. Or I could learn Spanish and then just totally fuck everybody up.
Yeah. I like that idea. Thanks, man.
Yep. No
Appreciate
problem,
it,
man.
Thanks, bud.
And that is it. I hope you enjoyed my talk with my friend Matt. We always have a good time out on the road. You can catch us both on the road with Aaron Goodvin in the foreseeable future, so come on out to a show. We would love to see you. You can find and follow Matt on Instagram. He is at Cincy Bass. I will spell that for you. At C-I-N-C-Y underscore B-A-S-S. That's at Cincy Bass. Do me a favor and give me a follow on the socials as well. I'm at Michael J. Music on Facebook and Twitter, and at Michael J. Official on Instagram. We also have a PayPal donation button on our website, tiopod.com. That is tiopod.com. So if you're feeling adventurous, you can drop us a few bucks to help us keep the show moving forward. You don't have to donate, but I would love you so much if you did. And if you or anyone you know has a story from the road that you'd like me to read out and share with my listeners here, please send it to me on the contact page at tiopod.com or at MJ, that's MJ as in Michael J, MJ at tiopod.com. I'm going to run out of my own stories very soon, so I'd love to hear yours. There's another talk headed your way next week, so stay tuned for that. And thanks again, as always, everybody, for listening, and I will see you again next time here on Turn It On.